Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Has texted whether you agree with this man or not. To place him on the same list as terrorists is farcical. Trev says, love to see a debate between the banned guy from the US and the Home Secretary. And Nick in London, American Talk Radio is inherently more honest than its British counterpart, as it is open to all views and creates an environment of equal opportunity hate, where all views are aired and no one gets hurt.
The issue is that in America, the First Amendment was written to protect offensive speech. We don't need a First Amendment to protect polite speech, do we? I mean, everyone engages in polite speech. What do we need protections for? It's speech which provokes thought that is considered offensive and hateful by those who disagree with you, isn't it? And so, therefore, it's only speech we're talking about, not the acts of murderers. And to lump me in with murderers is defaming me. It's libeling me.
Well, it's the show you've all been waiting for all weekend. It's the Savage Nation. There's no other show in radio worth listening to today. Sure, you can hear people talking about Obama's budget and how it's obscene. There's no other word for it. Wanting to give health care to illegal aliens. They're insane. The whole Democrat Party is in disrepair and crazy. Even the liberals are turning on them because they understand that they have children. And the children cannot become indentured servants to pay for Obama's egomania and the Democrats' corruption. Well, you've heard that all day long on other shows. The reason you're tuning into the Savage Nation is because of the fact that on Saturday night, there was a story that appeared in Britain saying that the ban on Michael Savage, in essence, you think it said that, had been lifted. That Michael Savage's name has been lifted from the banned in the UK list. Well, that's not what the article said. It is not at all what the article said. Some reports in the United States, based on the piece in the Daily Mail on Sunday morning that the ban on Michael Savage had been lifted, are untrue. The article doesn't say that at all. But I want to back up and tell you that I am heartened to a certain extent by the movement in this direction. What happened Saturday night was this. And incidentally, you can read the article on michaelsavage.com. Those of you near a computer, go to it. You can't find it anywhere else. For a while, it appeared for 24 hours on Drudge. He dropped it for today, which I'll never understand this. Today was the big day, and Matt posted it Saturday night and ran all the way Sunday, and it's gone on Monday when you really want to see it. But it's up on michaelsavage.com, the original article, and the World Net Daily article saying, Savage, pack your bags for England. But let me give you the background on this. Saturday night, 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. Michael is having a vodka and grapefruit juice. Michael is pondering the view of San Francisco Bay. Michael is thinking about things. Phone rings. Joe Farah, his friend and colleague from WorldNet Daily, says, have you seen the article that was just posted? Michael's heart thumped. He said, oh, God, no, more bad news. I said, what, more bad news? He said, no. He said, They're dropping the list of those banned from traveling to the UK, including you and including everyone else on the list, including the Hamas murderers. I said, well, okay, that's not a good sign, but at least I'm free. He said, well, what are your reactions? Here were my reactions to Joe Farris Saturday night. One, I am stunned. Two, I'll believe it when I see it. And three, I want a letter of apology. Those are exactly my positions right now. But as a matter of fact, many of my friends and colleagues sent me emails congratulating me, saying, Savage, you struck a great blow for freedom of speech. Thanks for fighting. Thanks for having the fortitude. Thanks for standing up to the to Jackie Smith. Thank you for getting your name off the list and for standing for freedom of speech, even for liberals who you detest and who detest you. I wish it was all true. I wish I could say we're going to celebrate today, but we can't celebrate quite yet because we haven't seen it in writing. All we saw was a report from the Daily Mail that said that the Home Secretary ditches least wanted list as a blunder. That was the article. The way it was reported on the Drudge Report was a little different. Savage travel ban lifted by UK. He's free to travel to England. Well, I don't know if I'm free. I've been invited to give a big speech there, I believe by one of the major debating societies at one of the major universities. I had not intended to go to England. I might go to England if the ban is lifted. And they'll find out that I'm a very humane, sane man who is concerned about not only freedom of speech for myself, but for my political opposition, and also for the threats to the survival of Western nations owing to radical Islam and the inroads being made by radical Islamists in Britain, the United States, France, and Germany. Those are facts of reality. There's nothing new in what I have said. And so over the weekend, as I said, the British newspaper, the Daily Mail, reports that Home Secretary Alan Johnson, who is the man who replaced Jackie Smith, is planning to end the policy of, quote, naming and shaming people banned from Britain. This does not mean that I, Michael Savage, have been taken off England's ban list. It does not mean that I have been taken off a list which includes murderers and terrorists. It doesn't mean that at all. But I think that the British government understands that Jackie Smith was a loose cannon, whatever. Putting my name on a list was a gimmick. And making it impossible for me to travel to Britain was a huge mistake for the people of Britain and for the government of the Labour Party. And so they're on the right track. But it really is about you. It's about a case of one man and my devoted audience of listeners who would not be intimidated, would not be bullied, and would not go gentle into that good night. Yeah, I was banned by a major Western country. I still may be banned. I don't know. But this is a fight that I and my listeners have been waging. Now, there are some in the media who realized the threat to freedom of speech and spoke out about my case over the last 3 months. You know, I look in my yard right now, and my tomatoes are coming up, in the fruits now are red, and the pears are starting to become ripe. This whole thing started when I put the seedlings in the ground. You say, well, it's only 3 months. It's been 3 months of hell. 3 months of hell, 3 months of fearing that next I'd be banned in another country, then another country, then another country, and I'd wind up a man without a country. And I believe that this has been orchestrated by the United States government in the Obama administration, because they would never do a frontal assault on talk radio. Instead, they try to use me as a canary in the mine shaft to see what would happen by going around the back door and trying to defame me with sound bites taken out of context. There were some in the media who realized the threat to freedom of speech and spoke out about my case. Hosts such as Laura Ingraham, Rusty Humphries, and Jerry Doyle spoke out strongly in my defense. Even Bill O'Reilly, my antagonist, though he did it grudgingly, spoke out against my being banned from England and what it really meant. But there are others who are the real ones who should be named and shamed. Here in the United States, where was the U.S. State Department? Where was the so-called Defender of Liberties, the ACLU, when we needed them? And what about those conservatives in the media who wrapped themselves in the flag, who said nothing? Well, I'll let you decide. So it's not yet time for Michael Savage to pack his bags for England. Yes, I think it's a sudden sign of sanity if this does happen. And I was stunned by UK Home Secretary Alan Johnson's decision to scrap his predecessor's list of people banned from Britain. Those are all true words, as published by Joe Farah in WorldNet Daily, which, again, you can only find directly on michaelsavage.com. They're still somewhere, but they've been lost into the ethers. It's a huge story. Michael Savage, pack your bags to England. Well, I don't know that I'm ready to go for it, but I won't believe it until they send a letter to me confirming it. I would also demand an apology from Jackie Smith. You see, Smith had no right to put Savage in America, from America, on the same list as a former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard, gang leaders in Russia serving 10 years for killing immigrants, and a Hezbollah militant who smashed in the head of a 4-year-old Jewish child with a rifle butt after killing her parents. Just last Friday, Jackie Smith, who did this to me, she actually admitted she was not up to being Home Secretary. She said she should have been given some training for the job before being named. Can you believe this? Well, as I said to you earlier, it's because of listeners like you that I, Michael Savage, who does not advocate violence, who instead advocates patriotic traditional values, meaning borders, language, and culture, it's because of you that this battle is still going on. And I think that banning Michael Savage says more about the government of England than it does about me. If you'd like to comment on this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com has all the articles. Let us have a little music, Ray, and then we'll be right back to take the calls, and I'm going to read a letter from my lawyer.
Has texted, Michael Savage has been made an example of unfairly. The UK harbours plenty of Muslims who incite hatred against the West. Smith is a hypocrite.
Yeah, and they haven't been banned. I mean, you've got people who murdered who are not banned from England. How about Kim Jong-il? Would he be permitted to travel to the UK? Or Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who said he wants to wipe all the Jews off the map? Would he be permitted to travel to the UK? So, as you can see, this is absurd. Now, to say that the British have lifted the ban on Michael Savage and free speech is strengthened is not 100% true yet. I wish it were true. I thought it was true Saturday night. But it was only when I got a letter from my lawyer that I learned it may not be true, because all that we learned so far is that they're no longer going to publish the list. Said the new Home Secretary said that the new Home Secretary was opposed to the publication of the list, not the list itself or the banning of those on it. The article didn't say that he would lift the ban on Michael Savage. So, again, I want to thank you and caution you. I wish I could celebrate with you today. But I have to keep fighting. And it's been 90 days of hell. Many of you say, oh, yeah, great publicity. All right, you try it someday. You try someday living in my shoes. Walk in my moccasins for 90 days and tell me it's a lot of fun. So the fact of the matter is it's not a lot of fun. But I have to follow this. I have to, you know, follow it through to the end, because I made a commitment that nobody's ever going to put me into a gas chamber. Let me be very clear. I'm not going into a box car. I'll kill three of them before they put me in a box car. That's a metaphorical statement. You see, I want to be very personal about this. 6 million Jews were killed, tortured, gassed, shot by the Nazis in World War II. Had only 100,000 of them gotten a gun when Hitler came to power and shot a Gestapo agent in the face, when they came to take them away, there would not have been a Holocaust. I have studied this inside and out. I've studied this since I'm a boy. The Germans did it very quietly. They went to the Jews and they said, you must come with us or report to the police station. And they went like sheep. And their children were killed in front of their eyes, and their hair was then used in packing guns or whatever. If every Jew had gotten the .22, and when the nice German officer came and said, are you ready for us, Mr. Schmiedel? And Mr. Schmiedel said, sure, one more moment, please, and came out blasting, that would have been the end of the Holocaust, because the Germans didn't want a mess. It would have upset the rest of the middle class in Germany, who was not behind this, by the way. And if you say, what does this have to do with Jackie Smith? It has everything to do with Jackie Smith. Let me be very clear. Let me be really clear. What she did was fascistic, and she did it on her own. And if you think that liberals are incapable of being fascist, then I have another guest coming for you. All the fascism that's raging in the West right now is coming from the leftists, not from the right. All of the fascism that is raging in the West today is coming from so-called liberals who would like to ban speech, imprison people, re-educate people, force taxation down people's throats. This is all fascism. So I am the canary in the cave. But I made a commitment that if, God forbid, we ever saw this coming to America in any form, in the most minute form, I would fight it till I was dead. And let me tell you something. The liberals have brought fascism back in fashion. And so I'm fighting for myself and for everyone listening to the show and for millions of liberals who may detest everything I stand for. No, you didn't fight for me, but I fought for you. Sure, I fought for myself. For if I'm not for myself, who will be? And if I'm only for myself, what am I? I'm much bigger than myself. God put me in this position for a reason. Many of my listeners who are religious understand that. There's a reason for us to be on earth. And if you've been dealt a pack of cards and one of those cards comes up a way you don't want it, you got to deal with the Joker. Nobody helped me except my listeners. The worst of them all was a First Amendment attorney who said to me, for $350,000, I might be able to get your name off the list. That was the worst moment of my entire 90 days. Somebody who I thought actually believed in freedom of speech, a liberal who walks around and postures about the First Amendment, wanted $350,000 from me to smear somebody to get my name off the list. I walked away from him. I said, no, I don't need to pay anyone off to get my name off a list. I'm an innocent man. I thought you believed in something. I thought you believed in freedom of speech. I have not yet met a liberal who believes in anything. They're liars. They're hypocrites. But more importantly, they're very dangerous.
Savage.
The government played with Michael Savage. The U.S. government used the British government in the form of Jackie Smith to try to do a backdoor attack upon freedom of speech by attacking conservatives. And let me tell you something, with Obama and his minions bankrupting America as rapidly as possible, you have never needed me more than you need me today. Make no mistake about it, without us, there's nothing tomorrow. There's no hope for your children. And you understand why these despots are desperate to silence us. Do you understand it once and for all? But we're not out of the woods yet. Nothing has happened. It's only a report. It's only a report that the list will no longer be continued by the new Home Secretary. He's going to scrap his predecessor's policy of naming and shaming people banned from Britain. I want to pause right here with the words naming and shaming for a reason. You know, in these 3 months, I have never told you where the naming and shaming came from. I would like you to call this program, if you attended Michael Savage's Name Them and Shame Them event, I believe it was at the Oakland Airport Hilton, or it could have been down the coast a little bit. I did this in, what, 97, 98, Name Them and Shame Them. Do you remember? Was anyone at the Name Them and Shame Them event, a phrase that I created? Isn't it funny how they stole that from me on top of it all? Isn't it interesting how these good liberals not only are aping fascism, but they're actually stealing my own words to try and hang me with them. Of course, they've been hung by their own petard. I have not yet been hung by my petard. They've been hung by their own petard. She's named and shamed herself. She said she was unqualified. The man who replaced her said that it was basically a mistake to use that list. But they'll never forget something here, though. Had I not fought back, had you not encouraged me to fight, had you not contributed to the Savage Defense Fund, had I rolled over, I would have been toast, and then there would be the next in line would have been one of the others. State Department did nothing. The great defender of personal rights, the ACLU, did nothing. All they said was, oh, this is a bad idea. My professional colleagues in the top three did virtually nothing. They almost destroyed me professionally and personally. If you think it has no effect upon a man of any age, you're mistaken. You think you could take it? You think you could be at war for 90 straight days and would have no effect on you inside and out? I've been at war for 15 years, but these 90 days were the worst of the last 15 years. I'm not complaining. I'm just explaining to you as a friend what this has done to one individual in America. You get up every day and you see the sun and you see a sunrise. I get up every day and I wonder which country will be next. You go to sleep every night wondering what you're going to have for breakfast or what you're going to do the next day or where you were going to go for summer vacation. I was wondering what enemy of freedom was going to come after me next. You think it's easy? Try it. Walk in my shoes for 90 days and try it. San Francisco, Jimmy, KNEW, we have a prize winner. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Like, I was at the Name 'Em and Shame 'Em, and I believe it was at the Marin Civic Center. And then I was fortunate enough to go to the Concord Pavilion show, which were both great.
The Name 'Em and Shame 'Em was at the, it was at one of the hotels. It was either at the Oakland Airport Hilton in 97 or 98. It was when I was doing one event a year, which I called Compassionate Conservative Conventions. Remember when George Bush stole it to get elected? Remember that one?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I'm still a member of your,
and Jimmy, do you recall who we had pictures of when we said Name 'Em or Shame 'Em? Whose pictures were we dancing around on the stage?
Madeline Halfbright. Who else was in there? Quite a boatload of them. You kept bringing them up, and your son was there. And
right, and they're now running the country. They're now running America. You understand that as well, Jimmy?
Yes.
It could be one of them is thin-skinned and waited all these years to get even.
Yeah.
Jimmy, let me send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity for having such a good memory, and thank you very much. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Sacramento. June, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Only for you, Michael. I'd have gone back to Australia long ago. I've lived in this country 60 years, met and married a wonderful man, American husband, and I lost him 7 years ago. I have dual citizenship. I can't stand it here any longer. I'm 84 years old, handicapped senior. If they've got to carry me on a bloody stretcher, I'm going back to Australia because I know
what's Why, June? What is it that's bothering you today in America?
Everything. Everything you say, Michael, is what I think. And I'm too old to put it into words. And I sit here alone every afternoon waiting for you at 3 o'clock. I just want to tell you I love you, Michael. That's all. I'm going now.
Thanks, June. Very touching. Very touching. What can you say? What can you say? Yes, in order for evil to triumph, all it takes is a few good men to do nothing. Are you one of those few good men who have your hat on backwards? Las Vegas, Rick, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just if they are doing what they're saying with the list, what bothers me is that they're still not taking you off the list with the others. You're still ganged up with the rest of them. Even if they do what they say they're going to do or whatever, they're still not disassociated.
Yeah, even if they eliminate the list and they say, well, we're not publishing such a list, what good does that do me? I'm still linked up with murderers.
Exactly.
All right, well, there's the problem. Michigan, Tom, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I first heard about it going in this morning into Chicago on a station there that you were off the list, and then they said they dropped the whole list. And I said, he's not off the list then. He's just underground blacklisted because there's no men in England, just like there's no men in Washington. Nobody will stand up for what's right. They could have stood up and said that they were wrong, but no, they just say they're going to drop the whole thing. Well, you're still on the list with the same ones if everybody got dropped.
That's right. In other words, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So let's go back to when Joe Farah called me. I said to him, I'm stunned. I'll believe it when I see it in writing from the government, and I want a letter of apology. In other words, unless they send me a letter and say it was a mistake on the part of Jackie Smith to link you, Michael Savage, up with murderers and terrorists and was sorry for it, that to me is the end of the road, isn't it?
Well, except for if they've dropped everybody, they can give you an apology and all that, but they dropped everybody instead of saying, well, you know, hey, these murderers and terrorists belong on the list and you don't.
So yeah, well, that would be the ideal, wouldn't it? That would be the ideal, wouldn't it? Yes, they've permanently darkened my name. Absolutely, Tom. Thank you. So what would you like to say? I'm going to ask you a question, all of you listening to the Savage Nation. I don't want to just talk about Obama's budget. That's a given. It's a no-brainer. He's a communist. He's surrounded by criminals. They're spending your money and your children's money and your grandchildren's money. They're robbing the treasury. They're robbing you blind. They're paying off gangsters. The gangsters are salivating on the sidelines waiting for the trillions of dollars that are going to be coming in their pockets from Pelosi, from Obama, from Wex, whatever his name is, Nostrilman with the big nose. You think they care about health care? If they cared so much about health care, why would they be offering health care to 20 million illegal aliens who aren't even citizens? Don't you understand what this is? It's gangster socialism. You know, there are varieties of socialism, just as there are varieties of capitalism. There's benign socialism. There's sane socialism on a light note. And then there's gangster socialism, which goes all the way up the scale to Stalin and Adolf Hitler, both socialists. This is gangster socialism without the death camps. Make no mistake about it. The reason they want 20 million illegal aliens on the health rolls is because there are billions of dollars that are going to be stolen by fake doctors, fake clinics, fake providers, fake drivers, fake ambulettes, fake medicine providers. What do I have to spell it out for you? It is corruption on the highest level coming from the highest office. Now, it's true that Obama's numbers are plummeting. It's true that if the election were held today, he would lose. It's true that even liberals have turned on him. If you read the articles from the Washington Post, even they're stunned. That is, writers from the Washington Post who have children wrote the article. And they actually said, it's because we have children that we have to say these things. See, once you have children, you start to think for somebody other than yourself. They're looking at it and they're saying this is not sustainable. I know how the liberals love to say sustainable this, sustainable that. Is this a sustainable program? Well, this is the least sustainable program in the history of America. Cap and trade, a laughing stock. It's nothing but graft and a boondoggle for those in the so-called green rackets. And make no mistake about it, it's a green racket, just like recycling is a racket. You don't understand it, but every time you go out, you know, put a can here and put the paper there, you think you're doing something good for the environment? It's a racket, my friends. Why do I say it? Because it takes more energy to recycle the cans and the paper. It takes more energy than it does to throw them in a landfill, meaning the amount of energy required to burn it, to condense it, and to convert it. But you wouldn't know any of that. There's trillions of dollars being wasted on this recycling garbage. And the next boondoggle coming from Goldman and Sachs and Company is cap and trade, the biggest gangster act in the history of the world. So let's go back to me. What does any of this have to do with Michael Savage being banned in England? Everything. Everything and nothing. It's because I stand opposed to graft corruption, because I stand for borders, language, and culture, that the corrupt, illiberal Obama administration went to a corrupt, abominable little lady from England and said, put him on a list, even though my show isn't heard there. They gave them sound bites taken out of context by this evil group called Media Matters, who are Stalinists. They would have worked very happily in Stalin's Russia, trying to destroy a political opponent through smear campaigns as a tactic of the radicals in the Soviet Union. And of course, they're very happy to do it with George Soros' money. And you stand for this. If we had a legitimate government, they would have lost their tax-free status a long time ago for targeting only conservatives, because by definition, they're violating 501c3 status. They are a political organization. They are not an educational organization. Political organizations are not permitted to have tax-free status. I'm enmeshed in a number of battles right now, but if you have a desire to help somewhere in the world, you ought to get a group together, and you ought to bring a class action lawsuit against Media Matters, and you should uncover their tax records. You should go after them through the government and see that their tax status is analyzed and revoked because they're a political organization, in my opinion. I can't do it. I'm busy right now. So now let's go back again. Let's go back again. Let's go back to basics. Has free speech been strengthened or weakened as a result of this? Have we won a victory for free speech yet? Have we gained anything or have we lost much in these 3 months? Well, I'll tell you right now what we've gained. We've gained a world looking in astonishment at what a labor socialist government is capable of. And this is only the beginning of what they would have done had I not stood up and fought back. Remember, if I had rolled over, you don't know what would have come next or who would have been on the list tomorrow. Madame Defarge. Madame Defarge with the verbal guillotine. Madame Defarge with the guillotine slamming, 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 until eventually the other revolutionaries were put into the guillotine. You know, by the time the French Revolution ended, not only were the property owners killed and their property stolen by the liberals of their time, but eventually then the guillotine was used to destroy those who had fought alongside those with the guillotine. They turned on themselves, just as Fidel Castro has done in Cuba, just as Hitler did with the SA, just as Stalin did with his original henchmen. It's the same all over the world. It's history repeating itself. So that's what it is. I once did a book called Tenacity. I never published it. I took pictures of street weeds. I know it sounds crazy. I went around with a close-up lens with a camera, and I went around the city of San Francisco. I think this was in 74, and I photographed weeds that were growing through cracks in the wall, weeds that came up through the cracks in the pavement. Wherever there was a weed coming out of the pavement or out of a wall, I focused on it because being trained in botany, I was very impressed with the tenacity of certain plants, how tough they are, and how in time they'll engulf the entire planet all over again, long after civilizations have disappeared and animal life has disappeared. The plants will again dominate. But they do it so slowly you don't even recognize that they're there sometimes. You think that they're all smiling and happy. But if you have studied plants as closely as I have, what you find is that it's a constant struggle for survival between one plant and another. Plant succession is all about one species of plants coming in and taking over a preceding garden variety of plants. So if you look at America, what you see going on right now is that the white European is being overrun by invaders, invading not species, but invaders. Let's put it to you that way. And when a species becomes incapable of defending itself in a garden or in a nation, they disappear. Have a nice break. Savage Nation, and life goes on. That's all. So after I heard the good news Saturday night, I thought it was final. I went out to dinner in the North Beach restaurant in North Beach because, you know, look, it's a place I go to because Lorenzo's a friend of mine. The food is the greatest, and he actually listens to the show. He's not one of these restaurant guys who makes believe he listens. He's very political, and he called me, you know, and I went in there. He said, it's a very, very special night. I said, well, I chose to celebrate it here tonight with you, Lorenzo, and I did. But, you know, it was a celebration that was too soon. That's all. The next, you know, couple of days brought the truth. The truth is nothing's changed. But, you know, we all want to believe in the goodness of mankind. We all want to believe that good things are going to come to us. But my deceased Russian father taught me since I've been a little boy, don't celebrate too soon. Get it in writing. And number three, I'll believe it when I see it. I hated when he used to say that to me. I thought it was so cynical and so old world. He was right. He was right. You know, get it in writing. Don't believe, I mean, you know, if you're a salesman or you think you got a business deal or you're a writer and you think you got a deal or you're a guy in Hollywood who think you got a movie, yeah, when you see it in writing, you know you got the movie. You know that by now. You're not a child. You know, the deal isn't done till it's done, so nothing's happened, in other words. But I had a good time Saturday night thinking it was done. But here I am. I wake and say, so you say, well, so what? What's the big deal? What are you going on and on about? I mean, it's not the biggest deal in the world. It is a big deal. It's a very big deal to be named with murderers and terrorists when all you are is a talker in the media. Forget that my politics may not be in sync with Barack Hussein Obama or Nancy Pelosi. So what? Most of Americans don't like Barack Hussein Obama's policies. Most Americans detest Nancy Pelosi's extreme liberalism. Make no mistake about it. They're covered for by the media. The people in this country don't like them. They don't like any of their policies. This is a fluke. The election was stolen. Moreover, it was thrown. The Republicans ran an old shoe. They knew the old shoe would lose. They could have run a young, dynamic Republican who might have won. But anyway, let's not go backwards. Let's forward. Go forward. So the fact is, so what if my politics are out of sync with Obama's? You know, is that a reason to put me on a list with murderers and terrorists? There's two skinheads from Russia who killed, I think, 10 immigrants, videotaped it and posted on a website. They're in prison. Now, putting them on a list of banned from England is kind of ludicrous, isn't it? Since they're in prison for life, I believe. So why would she list them? Because the whole truth is that she wanted to list some radical imams who are preaching death to the Queen, death to England, death to the British. We're going to bring in Sharia law. And they want them out of England. Rightly so. They need to ban them to preserve their nation's sovereignty. But they're afraid of looking like they're picking on radical Muslims. So who do they put in? People in prison who can't come there anyway. And boom, out of nowhere, an American talk show host who's a conservative. Based upon what? Based upon Media Matters taking sound bites out of context and then converting those sound bites into behavior rather than to words. And so here we are. It's a giant leap for free speech in one regard for them to even say that the list is no longer going to be published. Now they got to go to the next step. You must keep up the pressure. You must continue to write to England. You must continue to say, get Michael Savage's name off the list and apologize. And here's the question for the next hour. Should I pursue my lawsuit against Jackie Smith, yes or no?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hexham has texted, Michael Savage has been made an example of unfairly. The UK harbours plenty of Muslims who incite hatred against the West. Smith is a hypocrite.
As a British Muslim, I detest what Mike Savage has to say, really, but I would gladly have Mike Savage in the UK. So I think specifically Mike Savage and some other people on the list as well are sort of token additions to counter, to make it look like it isn't just against these Muslims.
I was shocked, angered. How in the world could I be linked with known murderers, people who have been put in prison for years for killing people, people who espouse the overthrow of your government, openly, when I am simply speaking, talking for 15 years on the radio, writing best-selling books? It was shocking to believe this is coming out of England, a country I've always loved and admired, specifically for its freedoms.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm trying to make a difference for the betterment of myself and for humanity, period, end of story. Believe it or not, it's up to you. Take it whichever way you want. You could be cynical about every person on earth, or at some point you can come to believe some people actually believe in what they're saying and actually try to do the right thing. You have to decide whether you're projecting your own inadequacies or this is the real man who you think it is. But make no mistake about it, this is a battle for freedom going on. And we're living in a very dangerous time under Obama, where not only are they pulling the wool over your eyes with so-called cap and trade, which is going to save the world, and health care legislation, which is going to give everybody health care. It's all the opposite of what they're saying, and people are catching on very quickly. Even the Washington Post, going back to Obama, forget me for a minute, and the fact that the UK Home Secretary, the new one, has said that the least wanted list is a blunder and they're going to drop it. The Washington Post had an article out today called "What's Next, Mr. President? Cardigans." Now, what is that about? I'm going to diverge for a minute and read a piece of this article that appeared today in the Washington Post, and I put it up on michaelsavage.com. These are two liberal writers for the Post, and here's what they say. Barely 6 months into his presidency, Barack Obama seems to be driving south into that political speed trap known as Carter Country, a sad sack landscape in which every major initiative meets not just with failure, but with scorn from political allies and foes alike. According to a July 13 CBS News poll, the once unassailable president's approval rating now stands at 57%, down 11 points from April. Half of Americans think the recession will last an additional 2 years or more, blah, 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 blah. And 57% think the country is on the wrong track. I'm going to go on from their article now. From a lousy cap-and-trade bill awaiting death in the Senate to a health care reform agenda already weak in the knees to the failure of the stimulus to deliver promised jobs and economic activity, what once looked like a hopetastic juggernaut is showing all the horsepower of a Chevy Cobalt. Despite such bravura, Obama must be furtively reviewing the history of recent Democratic administrations for some kind of roadmap out of his post-100 days ditch. And he goes on comparing him to Jimmy Carter and what's going on. And he says, of course, it's too early to write off Obama because he can still turn to the center instead of radically moving to the left as he has been doing, listening to Nancy Pelosi and the radicals on the left. He understands, and they understand in this article, that Bush was also a liar, and they write this. In the same way that Bush claimed to be cutting government even while increasing real spending by more than 70%, Obama seems to believe that saying one thing while doing another somehow makes it so. Read the article. What the new president has not quite grasped is that the American people understand both irony and cognitive dissonance. Instead, Obama has mistaken his personal popularity for a national predilection toward emergency-driven central planning. You hear this? He doesn't get that Americans prefer the slower process of building political consensus based on reality and at least a semblance of rational deliberation rather than one sky-is-falling legislative session after another. They've got it exactly right. And you have to read on. And they say what he must do is as follows. What are his options? Stop doing harm. Throwing money all over the economy, and especially to sectors that match up with Democratic interests, is the shortest path to what Margaret Thatcher described as the inherent flaw in socialism. Eventually, you run out of other people's money. He says, which leads us to the second point. Stop it with the magical realism already. What do they mean by that? They mean that they're lying to you. They say that the administration is now spending millions of dollars to revamp its useless stimulus tracking site, recovery.org, as one more indication that post-Bush, the White House still thinks of citizens as marks to be rolled. And they're suggesting that he go back to the center, do what Bill Clinton did. And they say this shouldn't be a difficult task for Obama. As a political animal, he has always resembled Clinton more than Carter. This might help him avoid the Carter-esque pileup he's driving into. Far more important, it just might help the rest of us. That's from Nick Gillespie and Matt Welch, and they're from Reason.com. I guess they're not exactly liberals themselves, but it was published in a liberal newspaper. Now, what does that have to do with me? It has everything to do with me. It has nothing to do with me. The reason that I'm on the banned list, the reason I was linked up with murderers and terrorists, is because some parties in the U.S. government, in my opinion, worked with the Media Matters Stalinists, took sound bites out of context, sent them to England, and said to Jackie Smith, their pawn, put him on a list with murderers. In that way, we can start defaming all conservatives that we disagree with. You've heard of the politics of personal destruction in America. There's nothing new in that. I'm in radio, and I'm used to it. This took it to a new level, though. This is a whole new level. This is on the level of the Soviet Union, what they've done to me. But I don't think they expected you, the audience, to contribute so generously to the Savage Defense Fund. They didn't expect that I would get the largest law firm in England. They didn't know that when I went on the BBC, I would be so articulate and so, I don't know how to put it, the people liked me. When I went on the BBC, the people liked me. Opinion polls said 80-20 were running in my favor. Even political opponents said he shouldn't have been banned. They didn't expect any of that. And as a result of it, it was a PR disaster for the Obama administration and for the Home Secretary, who eventually had to resign. She was a pawn. She failed. They pushed her off the board. Now, what will happen next, I am not sure. I don't know. It's very hard to tell whether they're going to do the right thing and say, you know what, Savage, you're right. You don't belong with murderers. You don't belong with terrorists. We're sorry. We're taking your name off the list, and we're going to apologize to you. That's what you call a 100% clean bill of health. It still doesn't take away the damage they've done to me by linking me up with them, or the emotional cost of myself and my family, or the fact that I have 24/7 security. No, none of that has been altered, has it? So damage has been done. I'll be right back. Savage.
Home Secretary Jackie Smith has said that the reason you were banned is because the things that you say foment hatred, engaging people in spreading hatred as well. What do you say to the reasons behind the ban?
Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. There are millions of people who agree with me, not only in America but around the world. Now, you can take sound bites from an individual and turn them into anything you want. But if you actually listen to what I said about these things, it might be a different individual that you're hearing. I don't know which show Jackie heard or when she heard it, but I'm not broadcast in England. So obviously she was given some selected sound bites by individuals who detest my points of view and are trying to skewer me. That's not freedom of speech, nor is that fair. The issue is that in America, the First Amendment was written to protect offensive speech. We don't need a First Amendment to protect polite speech, do we? I mean, everyone engages in polite speech. What do we need protections for? It's speech which provokes thought that is considered offensive and hateful by those who disagree with you, isn't it? And so, therefore, it's only speech we're talking about, not the acts of murderers. And to lump me in with murderers is defaming me. It's libeling me.
Adam in Lancaster has texted, whether you agree with this man or not, to place him on the same list as terrorists is farcical. Trev says, love to see a debate between the banned guy from the US and the Home Secretary. And Nick in London, American Talk Radio, is inherently more honest than its British counterpart, as it is open to all views and creates an environment of equal opportunity hate, where all views are aired and no one gets hurt.
I was shocked, angered. How in the world could I be linked with known murderers, people who have been put in prison for years for killing people, people who espouse the overthrow of your government openly, when I am simply speaking, talking for 15 years on the radio, writing best-selling books? It was shocking to believe this is coming out of England, a country I've always loved and admired, specifically for its freedoms.
As a British Muslim, I detest what Mike Savage has to say, really, but I would gladly have Mike Savage in the UK. So I think specifically Mike Savage and some other people on the list as well are sort of talking additions to counter, to make it look like it isn't just against these Muslims.
I remember the 1960s when true liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. When have you last heard a liberal say, oh, I may disagree with conservative talk radio, but I would fight to the death their right to say what they believe in? I don't hear that anymore. What instead I hear is their threats to national security. That was stated on the congressional floor by Congressman Hinchey. He says, I'm a threat to national security, and he's trying to pass the so-called fairness doctrine to close down freedom of speech. Is that liberalism? Liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, Michael Savage, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. That's what this country has been about from the day it was founded. That's the trail of tears and the trail of blood that led to the freedoms that we enjoy in this country today. And we cannot permit a few small-minded martinets who don't even know that they're inhabiting the souls of dictatorships in Congress right now to deny us our freedom of speech. Where are the true good liberals?
I want to define satire, ridicule, and sarcasm for those of you who love talk radio. Satire is the use of irony, sarcasm, ridicule, or the like in exposing, denouncing, or deriding vice, folly, etc. What is ridicule? We use it on talk radio all the time if we know how. It is speech or action intended to cause contemptuous laughter at a person or thing. Derision. Derision, my friends, is ridicule. That's part of freedom of speech. And finally, sarcasm should be used all the time if you know how to do it. What is sarcasm? Harsh or bitter derision or irony. A sharply ironical taunt, sneering or cutting remark, a review full of sarcasms. That's freedom of speech, my friends.
When I offend doctrinaire knee-jerk Republicans, yes, I don't limit my criticism to the Democrats or the liberals. When I offend doctrinaire knee-jerk Republicans by pointing out that there are now more contractors than U.S. soldiers in Iraq, whose freedoms am I denying? The freedoms of the military-industrial complex to rob the public? The freedoms of the warmongers who refuse to either win definitively or leave? Eisenhower warned us, beware the military-industrial complex. I've played that on my show over and over again. Who am I criticizing, Democrats or Republicans? I'll let you decide. When I state that our Army and Marine heroes are being sent in to fight door-to-door and suffer and die, and then be given court-martials if they do their job a little too well, United States history, whose freedoms am I denying, telling our generals how to conduct the war? Well, I wonder, is he not a politician telling generals how to conduct the war? No war has ever been conducted like this. And when I call illegal aliens invaders who must be forced to deport themselves, and I present the social and fiscal drain of this invading army of illegal aliens, whose freedoms am I denying? Who am I offending? The doctrinaire knee-jerk Republicans or the Democrats? Probably both. When I, Michael Savage, support my position for borders, language, and culture, do I deny my fellow citizens their rights to redress their grievances to a government all too eager to continue to flood our nation with cheap laborers? When I present the fact that 30% or one of three prisoners in federal lockups is an illegal alien who doesn't belong here to begin with, do I deny or do I grant my fellow U.S. citizens their right to speak freely through me, a talk show host? When I detail the epidemic of drunk driving and vehicular homicides being inflicted on this country by brazen illegal aliens who are deported only to return and drive drunk again, drive and kill again, I surely do not deny my fellow Americans their freedom of speech or their right to redress their grievances, do I? So whose rights am I offending? Certain special interests, I would assume. Well, that's not my problem. If these and other like opinions of mine were mine alone, I would not have risen to this position I now enjoy in the world of the spoken and written word. In fact, I am the voice of the voiceless, who have been marginalized and silenced by the illiberal liberals who control virtually all avenues of images and ideas that the world sees. All the images and ideas, with the limited exception of conservative talk radio, the most vulnerable medium, now under attack by the new National Socialists, who would ban free speech that they disagree with by threatening corporate sponsors through extortionist means of false boycotts, using different techniques, but wanting to achieve the same ends as all dictatorships, such as Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. That is total control of speech, which is the opposite of freedom of speech. In conclusion, I would like to introduce you to the most important critic that I have ever had. And his name is Teddy. Teddy, of course, is my constant companion. And just as in the RCA ad, I am not his master's voice, but I think he is my master's voice. Teddy, the most famous dog
in American talk radio. But I think that Teddy is number one to me. Teddy, say goodbye to everybody at the Talkers Convention.
Well, I'm sitting here drinking a cup of green tea, and I have a cup in my hand given to me by a relative who I love very dearly. And it says peace on the top, P-E-A-C-E. It does not mean to be in a place where there is no noise, trouble, or hard work. It means to be in the midst of those things and still be calm in your heart. Isn't that the goal? If you can keep your head while all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, then you'll be a man, my son, Rudyard Kipling. It's been said many times and in many ways. Stress is not necessarily a bad thing. It's how you deal with the stress. If you're alive, you're going to have stress. There is no such thing as a stress-free life. Ask any fish, ask any ant, ask any leaf. The wind itself is in constant flux. So for people who keep saying, I don't want stress, I want to live without stress, they're not realistic. They're not living in the real world. But then when you take varieties of stresses, the worst kinds are those that are not resolved. Unresolved stress is the killer. Things you can't fight against, things that you have no control over are the things that kill you unless you learn how to accept the fact that there are certain things you have no power over. I guess that goes into the whole therapy racket, which is that, you know, I have no power over this, which is, you know, whatever. So I have fought against this least wanted list because I know that I'm innocent and I know that she's guilty. I know that I'm right and I know that she's wrong. But the decision to scrap Jackie Smith's policy of naming people banned from Britain for spreading, they call it hate, is, it's not a done deal. That's all. A lot of you thought it was. I thought it was until I learned from my lawyer this morning that it may not be. He sent me a letter saying it's not necessarily so. People reported Britain lifts ban on Michael Savage. Free speech strengthened. Savage win no longer banned in Britain. I thank all the journalists who took it that way. I really do, and I want to thank all of you if you wrote articles to that effect. Radio Inc. said UK lives ban on Savage. I hope they're right. Savage sued Smith for libel over his inclusion on a list of 16 people, which also included extremist Islamic clerics, a former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard, and two Russian skinheads now in prison for their involvement in the deaths of 20 people. Well, I'd be nice if it was over, but it's not over. Not over till it's over. So should I follow through with my lawsuit, even if they lift my name off the list, is one question. Many of you contributed money, some considerable amounts, by the way, and I want to thank you again. Should there be any funds left over at the end of all of this, and there may or may not be, I'm going to use it to very good causes, for other freedom of speech causes. That's where it'll go. But we're not there yet. It's not over yet. So we can talk about other things. How about this? I took my Cadillac out last night because it was hot, a 65 Caddy. And should I tell you I was wowed and it was wonderful and it was better than my new car? The answer is no. It fumed. It stinks. It's noisy. And that's what makes a big old American car fun. But I got to tell you, the new cars are a lot better. They really are. It rides better than the new car. There's no car that has ridden as good as the 65 Caddy that I've ever owned because of the size of it. It's 19 feet 6 inches long. The steel in it is so heavy. The glass is so thick. You know, you remember my metaphor when the chrome was thick and the women were straight? By the way, forgive me if I sound exhausted. I am. I'm dead tired. I don't know what it is. This whole thing is, I feel more tired today than I did in the middle of this whole battle. I feel really drained from it all right now. I feel just wasted from it all. It's such a waste of energy. You know, think of what I could have been doing for this time I've been involved with lawyers and reading letters from lawyers all day long and strategizing and worrying about it. And, you know, what's next? Who's next? What's this government up to? You know, I have no faith in the Obama administration. I think they're pure evil. I give them absolutely no credit for anything. I think that they're the most dangerous gang that ever took over the country. I'm telling you how I see it. I fear them. And the people are not supposed to fear a country, a government that's democratic. Forget that they're public servants. They never were. I never believed that. But their relative levels of government, let us say, power and government audacity and government danger, we're very close to losing our freedoms entirely in this country from this gang. This gang will stop at nothing to bust out this country for gain. I keep making the metaphor up from The Sopranos of the gambler gets in over his head, loses a fortune. He has the IOUs, and then the mob takes over his huge sporting goods store. They move in the back room, and they start charging him interest only. He can never pay it back because it's 19% a week. So eventually they start selling things out the back door. First it's the hats. Then it's the baseball gloves. And little by little, the sporting goods store has empty shelves, emptier and emptier, just as the Clinton administration and then the Bush administration and now the Obama administration have sold off our national pride and our national sovereignty, transferring whole factories to China and to India, and who are now eating us for breakfast, sending our technology there, just like the gang that took over the sporting goods store. Until eventually, when there's very little of value left to sell, they take the credit, the line of credit that the sporting goods store has, and they run up a couple hundred grand worth of first-class airline tickets, intending never to pay the tab. And then they start giving the tickets away or selling them at a discount, exactly as Obama and Pelosi and Dodd are doing now with a $3 trillion budget. It's not their money. They're taking our credit line, and they're spending it just like the gang that took over the sporting goods store in The Sopranos. They don't intend to pay that back. They don't give a rat's behind about paying it back. All they care about is flying in a G500 now. They don't care about tomorrow. They don't care about their children or the children's children. These are blind people who are drunk on power, who are giving not a thought to tomorrow. All they care about is more power. How do I fit into all of this? Exactly, in some ways and in no way. Any conservative who points this out is a threat to this gang. And although in other countries they just outright kill you, we're not there yet. In pure tyrannies, and forget freedom of speech, any critic is disappeared. They do it in Russia. And I have long feared that this was coming to this country, where any critic of a despotic regime would be killed. They tried to smear me. They tried to get me banned. They tried to exile me. I fear this government. I fear it every day of my life. I have no faith in it. And so therefore, ladies and gentlemen, what's next from Mr. President? We have no idea. San Antonio, Stacy, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
What's on your mind, Stacy?
Well, you know, Michael, I always considered myself pretty much a liberal. Then I started listening to you and the things that you say, the truth that you speak to me.
I can't hear you, Stacey. You'll have to speak louder. Just speak as loud as you can.
The truths that you speak to me.
All right, then I'm a dangerous man. I'm a very dangerous man. Truth is very dangerous to liars, isn't it?
No. I think you're brilliant. I think that what you say is...
All right, but Stacy, what I'm saying is you were once very liberal and now you think you're a conservative. That's why I say I'm a very dangerous man to a liberal regime. Thank you for the call. Idaho, Aaron, you're up next on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I am so happy for you. Your victory is our victory. You have called the liberals crap, and they're going to fold. You are going to win this. Dr. Savage, I want you to know that you thought you were alone in this. It wasn't just Jerry Dole and Rusty Humphreys. Our local radio talk show host broke the story the day it happened. He screamed, if this happens to Michael, won't this happen to me? And I want you to know that there is also one other... conservative talk show host who does deserve condemnation. That's Groucho Marx, who actually praised England for putting on that list. And then he has the audacity to accuse you of copying him when he stole the phrase Islamofascism from you. He even stole the dog idea from you.
Yeah, no, he's a completely horrible man. He's an evil little man. He's a lawyer. Never forget he's a lawyer who worked for George Bush. That's all you need to know. And he poses as a conservative. It's shocking anybody would not see through this little twerp. But look, his voice alone has condemned him to the hinterland. He'll never get any traction. He sounds like Groucho Marx. He's not the issue. He's a fly in a crap house wall, as far as I'm concerned. For taking the side of England, what does that say about a man who poses as a conservative and is a good friend of Sean Hannity? What does that tell you?
It tells me that...
What does that tell you about Sean Hannity? What does it tell you about Sean Hannity who didn't lift a finger? That lousy corned beef eating fraud. Don't get me started with that faker. I didn't want to lose my temper today, but I tell you who he is to me. He's out there. Put an apron on and stop faking it. I'm sorry I got angry. I don't even want to talk about it. He should put on an apron, Sean Hannity, and take a job in Duffy's Tavern. That's all he's good for, that faker. If he didn't follow Rush Limbaugh, he never would be anywhere. Let me get off the air now.
Savage.
A couple of other articles I put up on michaelsavage.com. One of them is The Terrible Truth About Walter Cronkite. Don't miss it. Walter Cronkite was an evil man. Walter Cronkite stabbed our troops in the back and said that the North Vietnamese, the NVA, had won during the Tet Offensive when the opposite was true. Many of our men died and were wounded for life defending South Vietnam from the communist takeover. It doesn't matter whether or not you were for or against the Vietnam War. All you got to know is that Cronkite's public verdict that the 1968 Tet Offensive was a defeat for the U.S. was a turning point in American support for the war. Walter Cronkite falsely claimed that the Viet Cong had held the American embassy for 6 hours. It was a major defeat for the communist enemy, by the way, militarily. It's a terrible, terrible thing to realize how distorted the news is, that the people in the media don't even know this or didn't want to report it. In 1979, Cronkite gave an interview to the Soviet magazine Literary Gazette, and he told one of the reporters that the Soviet threat was most likely a myth. He was a fellow traveler, in other words, which is why the media has glorified him, which is why the media made him into something he wasn't. Read The Terrible Truth About Walter Cronkite. I think it's still up on michaelsavage.com. I know WorldNet Daily did an article on it, but Cliff Kincaid did one, which we have to cover tomorrow. There's another article, I hope it's still there, about the world's oldest man died over the weekend. He was 113. If you read the whole story, there's a couple of points that you should know about the old man. There it is. Trusted Cronkite pushed anti-American agenda. It's still up. The old man, you don't have to repost. But the man flew in World War I, the old, not Cronkite. Cronkite flew on communism his whole life, or let us say left-leaning socialism. Let's just say media anti-Americanism. Those are the wings upon which he flew. The old man who died at 113 in England, he actually flew in World War I, and he said he lived this long primarily to tell people wherever he went about the heroes who flew airplanes with him. He loved his fellow compatriots. But when you read the whole story, the end line was the most important, the last couple of lines. They said to him, to what do you owe your longevity? And he said, whiskey, cigarettes, and wild, wild women. Now, he didn't say wild women. He said wild, wild women. In other words, he was a party animal. And he lived to 113. Whiskey, cigarettes, and wild, wild women are what he ascribed it to. Not vitamins, not garlic, not Tai Chi, not exercise, not running and looking at his watch. But whiskey, cigarettes, and wild, wild women. And you have to look at that and wonder what's happened to the West, that you have nanny states and ninnies running everything. You have guys like Mayor Bloomberg in New York who banned smoking. You have a government that tells the soldiers that they can't even smoke in a combat zone. Of course, that was overturned by the military for now. You have a U.S. Navy that won't fire a shot. You have a U.S. military that just wants to use money for developing weapons, but never uses them to defend us. Here we have a captured troop, for example, one of our men, some are implying he deserted. I don't know where they got that from. I have no idea. But let's say he was captured. And we're sitting here wringing our hands over a captured soldier. There's an answer to that, too. Capture 1,000 of them. Capture a whole village and make it hostage, unless they release the soldier. What kind of military is this if it's not being used? Why are we sending our men into harm's way and telling them to fire a gun only when they consult a booklet back in Washington first? How can we win the war? We can't. Basically, we cannot win in Afghanistan. It's over. We may as well just leave. Let the Taliban have Afghanistan. It's a lost cause. Of course, it won't happen because Afghanistan is now Obama's Iraq. After all, how else can the military-industrial complex keep on rolling along unless you have a good hot zone in order to a place where you can test weaponry and, of course, practice various techniques and charge the taxpayer $16 for a tray of food? There are no longer cooks in the military and combat zones. They're provided by one of the subsidiaries of one of the defense contractors, prepackaged meals, and they bill the military for each meal. And I understand if a soldier goes back for a second helping, they charge another $16 per tray back to the taxpayer. So there's no longer a cook cooking the food who's an enlisted man. There's now a contractor cooking the books, not an enlisted man. An enlisted gangster contractor who paid off a congressman to get the contract. So it's Obama's Iraq. And now the ungrateful Iraqis, after we liberated them from Saddam Hussein, they won't even pay us back through reparations. Why don't they pay us back? We're broke. We're bankrupt. It cost us at least $1 trillion to liberate the 24 million ungrateful Iraqis. Why don't we demand reparations in the form of oil? I called for it in my book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. Doesn't it make sense to you that we should be paid back? You can't pay back the families of the men who died or the men who were walking around without legs, can you? You could pay back the Treasury somehow, but I had a plan on Friday on how to pay back the families whose men died in combat or who were maimed in combat. I came up with it Friday, didn't make it to the news. I said, do what Alexander the Great did. Forgive taxes to the survivors of those men. The wives will never pay taxes again. The children will never pay taxes again. If the father died in Iraq or in Afghanistan, no taxation for life. Alexander the Great did it. Why can't Obama the Magnificent do it? Why? Because the concept of no taxation is a poison pill to a Democrat, or for that matter, to a Republican. San Francisco, Susan, KNEW, San Francisco. What's on your mind, Susan?
Yes, Michael. I'd like you to pursue the suit with Jackie Smith. I'd like to see her go down, and I want to see you do it. You're the voice for the voiceless, Michael, and I really appreciate all of it. I'm a 10-year listener, and I don't know what I would do if you ever went off the air.
Mm. So, well, look, I got to tell you something. It's because of listeners like you that I get up and do the show at all anymore.
You're the reason.
I certainly don't do it for a claim, and I don't certainly don't do it for the love of my compatriots, my conservative compatriots in the media, do I?
Well, they're not loyal to you, Michael, and you deserve loyalty.
Well, they're not loyal to the bigger issue. The bigger issue is not me. The bigger issue is freedom of speech. Is that not the bigger issue?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If that's gone...
Look, I've got a few steps to go through first. I'm a little... I'm not focused right now, Susan. My mind is wandering for some reason. The fact of the matter is that... the list has not been lifted. They just said they won't be publishing such lists anymore. But we don't know what that really means. My attorneys have written a letter to the Treasury solicitor in England asking for clarification. He's written a letter to the Home Secretary asking for clarification. When we have that clarification, I will read it out on the Savage Nation. Right now, we don't know. You see?
Don't want us to know.
Hey, Susan, if I am lifted from the list and I'm invited to give a speech before Parliament in England, let's say a year from now, what if I put together a tour and I said I'm going to invite 1,000 Savage Nation loyalists to come on a massive tour with me? We'll charter 3 jumbo jets and we'll all fly into England together for a massive speech. and it'll be all those who devoted any money to the Savage Legal Fund. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Amazing.
Wouldn't that be phenomenal? 3,000 people showing up in England?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, it's a big day for Michael Savage, today being July 20th. I know many of you are tuning in for the first time or to hear what I have to say specifically about the news that was all over the internet over the weekend, certainly not in your local dinosaur newspaper. And that is from the London Daily Mail, Saturday night, new UK Home Secretary ditches least wanted list, calling it a blunder. The decision to scrap Jackie Smith's policy of naming people banned from Britain for spreading hate could make it impossible for the UK to contest Michael Savage's demand for damages, they say. I want you to notice that they said they are thinking of scrapping the policy of naming the people who are banned from Britain. They didn't say they're actually going to take my name off the list. So understand that I am still in danger. I have still been lumped in with murderers and terrorists. And as a baseball coach once said, it's not over till it's over. Michael Savage, pack your bags for England, says WorldNet Daily. They quote me from Saturday night where they say, calling it a sudden sign of sanity, Savage said he's stunned by UK Home Secretary Alan Johnson's decision to scrap his predecessor's list of people banned from Britain. Read more about it on michaelsavage.com. Don't miss the article about Walter Cronkite. I was not surprised to see the media glorifying this anti-American leftist. I was surprised to see that virtually nobody in the media knows who he really was except WorldNet Daily. And they wrote a great article on michaelsavage.com, Trusted Cronkite Pushed Anti-American Agenda. The so-called most trusted man in the country was actually the man who stabbed our troops in the back during the Vietnam War. And I'll tell you more about it today on The Savage Nation. And now, surprisingly, from the Washington Post, an article by two reporters who are asking Obama, saying, what's next, Mr. President, Cardigans? And what do they mean by that? They say that barely 6 months into his presidency, Barack Obama seems to be driving south into that political speed trap known as Carter Country. What that means is these liberals have children. By their own admission, they're terrified as to where Obama is leading the nation. It's an unsupportable program. His budget's out of control. His Medicare for all, Medicaid for all, government health for all, including 20 million illegal aliens, will bust the nation forever. And they're saying, you are going off the rails, Mr. President. All right, one small step for Michael Savage, one giant leap for free speech, part one. Over the weekend, the British newspaper, The Daily Mail, reported that the Home Secretary, Alan Johnson, the man who is replacing Jackie Smith, he is planning to end the policy of, quote, naming and shaming people banned from Britain. Now, I want to be absolutely clear. This does not mean that I, Michael Savage, have been taken off England's ban list. It doesn't mean that I've been taken off a list which includes murderers and terrorists, even though I'm only a talk show host. But it does mean that the British government seems to recognize what a huge mistake they've made. And that is one small step for Savage and one giant leap for free speech. But let's be clear. This is not a case of a government finding the right path or of Great Britain's fatally injured Labour Party desperately trying to save itself. This is really about one man and his devoted audience of millions of listeners who would not be intimidated, would not be bullied, and would not go gentle into that good night. Now, I was banned by a major Western country for no reason whatsoever. This is a fight that I and my listeners have been waging by ourselves. The government didn't help me. But there were some in the media who realized the threat to freedom of speech, and they spoke out about my case. Even Bill O'Reilly, who he and I were sort of antagonists, he did grudgingly speak against my being banned from England. Hosts such as Laura Ingraham, Rusty Humphries, and Jerry Doyle spoke out strongly in my defense. But there are others in the media who are the real ones who should be named and shamed. They are the U.S. State Department, who did nothing to defend an American citizen unfairly, basically blacklisted. What about the so-called Defender of Civil Liberties, the ACLU? How come they did nothing? And need I mention those loud voices who wrapped themselves in the flag, who did nothing for freedom of speech? You decide. So, again, I want to thank you and caution you. I wish I could celebrate with you today. But I have to keep fighting. And it's been 90 days of hell. Many of you say, oh, yeah, great publicity. All right, you try it someday. You try someday living in my shoes, walk in my moccasins for 90 days, and tell me it's a lot of fun. So the fact of the matter is it's not a lot of fun. But I have to follow this. I have to, you know, follow it through to the end. Because I made a commitment that nobody's ever going to put me into a gas chamber. Let me be very clear. I'm not going into a boxcar. I'll kill three of them before they put me in a boxcar. That's a metaphorical statement. You see, I want to be very personal about this. 6 million Jews were killed, tortured, gassed, shot by the Nazis in World War II. Had only 100,000 of them gotten a gun when Hitler came to power and shot a Gestapo agent in the face when they came to take them away, there would not have been a Holocaust. I have studied this inside and out. I've studied this since I'm a boy. The Germans did it very quietly. They went to the Jews and they said, you must come with us or report to the police station. And they went like sheep. And their children were killed in front of their eyes, and their hair was then used in packing guns or whatever. If every Jew had gotten the .22, and when the nice German officer came and said, are you ready for us, Mr. Schmiedel? And Mr. Schmiedel said, sure, one more moment, please, and came out blasting. That would have been the end of the Holocaust, because the Germans didn't want a mess. It would have upset the rest of the middle class in Germany, who was not behind this, by the way. And if you say, what does this have to do with Jackie Smith? It has everything to do with Jackie Smith. Let me be very clear. Let me be really clear. What she did was fascistic, and she did it on her own. And if you think that liberals are incapable of being fascist, then I have another guest coming for you. All the fascism that's raging in the West right now is coming from the leftists, not from the right. All of the fascism that is raging in the West today is coming from so-called liberals who would like to ban speech, imprison people, re-educate people, force taxation down people's throats. This is all fascism. So I am the canary in the cave. But I made a commitment that if God forbid we ever saw this coming to America in any form, in the most minute form, I would fight it till I was dead. And let me tell you something, the liberals have brought fascism back in fashion. And so I'm fighting for myself and for everyone listening to the show and for millions of liberals who may detest everything I stand for. No, you didn't fight for me, but I fought for you. Sure, I fought for myself, for if I'm not for myself, who will be? And if I'm only for myself, what am I? I'm much bigger than myself. God put me in this position for a reason. Many of my listeners who are religious understand that. There's a reason for us to be on earth. And if you've been dealt a pack of cards and one of those cards comes up a way you don't want it, you got to deal with the Joker. Nobody helped me except my listeners. The worst of them all was a First Amendment attorney who said to me, for $350,000, I might be able to get your name off the list. That was the worst moment of my entire 90 days. Somebody who I thought actually believed in freedom of speech, a liberal who walks around and postures about the First Amendment, wanted $350,000 from me to smear somebody to get my name off the list. I walked away from him. I said, no, I don't need to pay anyone off to get my name off a list. I'm an innocent man. I thought you believed in something. I thought you believed in freedom of speech. I have not yet met a liberal who believes in anything. They're liars. They're hypocrites. But more importantly, they're very dangerous.
Savage.
One small step for Savage, one giant leap for free speech. This is the second part. Because of what England did, I, Michael Savage, was nearly destroyed emotionally, personally, and professionally, all by one person, British Home Secretary Jackie Smith. I stood virtually alone in the media, but I fought back. I fought back with your help, my listeners, those of you who contributed to my defense fund. God bless you and thank you. You gave me tremendous support when I needed it. But this is not over. Make no mistake about it. I was fighting alone only with your help. Nobody really helped me in the media, not to any extent. I think this should be a message to those in the American government who would impose so-called fairness on the airwaves in order to stifle any voices of opposition. When you try to silence opposing voices, if you follow the path of Chavez and Castro by pushing your critics off the media, eventually you're going to pay the price for it yourself. You will be castigated just as Jackie Smith was. The people demand freedom of speech. Thousands of letters and emails were sent. Each one of them contains a lesson for the Obama administration, this Congress, and that is this. If you try to limit free speech, multitudes of liberals and conservatives will stand up and reject your oppression. They will defend the fundamental right to freedom of speech, whether they agree with what is being said or not. During this battle, I have defended the rights of thousands of talk show hosts in this nation and millions of ordinary Americans. Though many of them would never acknowledge it, I have also defended the liberty of millions of leftists, even though they would never lift a finger to defend me. I'll never be acknowledged for it, but the power of freedom of speech is that it applies to all parts of the political spectrum, not just the spectrum that is dominant or in power. Do not let your guard down. As I have said, the ban on Michael Savage has not yet been officially lifted by the British government. I still need your help. And you can do that by going to michaelsavage.com. But know that victory is in sight. Because of you, the Savage Nation, the high and the mighty and the low and the weak in England and in America are thinking twice about the fairness doctrine. You have never needed me more than you need me today. Make no mistake about it. Without us, there's nothing tomorrow. There's no hope for your children. And you understand why these despots are desperate to silence us. Do you understand it once and for all? But we're not out of the woods yet. Nothing has happened. It's only a report. It's only a report that the list will no longer be continued by the new Home Secretary. He's going to scrap his predecessor's policy of naming and shaming people banned from Britain. I want to pause right here with the words naming and shaming for a reason. You know, in these 3 months, I have never told you where the naming and shaming came from. I would like you to call this program, if you attended Michael Savage's Name Them and Shame Them event. I believe it was at the Oakland Airport Hilton, or it could have been down the coast a little bit. I did this in, what, 97, 98, Name Them and Shame Them. Do you remember? Was anyone at the Name Them and Shame Them event, a phrase that I created? Isn't it funny how they stole that from me on top of it all? Isn't it interesting how these good liberals not only are aping fascism, but they're actually stealing my own words to try and hang me with them? Of course, they've been hung by their own petard. I have not yet been hung by my petard. They've been hung by their own petard. She's named and shamed herself. She said she was unqualified. The man who replaced her said that it was basically a mistake to use that list. But they'll never forget something here, though. Had I not fought back, had you not encouraged me to fight, had you not contributed to the Savage Defense Fund, had I rolled over, I would have been toast. And then there would be the next in line would have been one of the others. State Department did nothing. The great defender of personal rights, the ACLU, did nothing. All they said was, oh, this is a bad idea. My professional colleagues in the top three did virtually nothing. They almost destroyed me professionally and personally. If you think it has no effect upon a man of any age, you're mistaken. You think you could take it? You think you could be at war for 90 straight days and it would have no effect on you inside and out? I've been at war for 15 years, but these 90 days were the worst of the last 15 years. I'm not complaining. I'm just explaining to you as a friend what this has done to one individual in America. You get up every day and you see the sun and you see a sunrise. I get up every day and I wonder which country will be next. You go to sleep every night wondering what you're going to have for breakfast or what you're going to do the next day or where you were going to go for summer vacation. I was wondering what enemy of freedom was going to come after me next. You think it's easy? Try it. Walk in my shoes for 90 days and try it. San Francisco, Jimmy, KNEW, we have a prize winner. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Hi, Mike. I was at the Name 'Em and Shame 'Em, and I believe it was at the Marin Civic Center. Then I was fortunate enough to go to the Concord Pavilion show, which were both great.
The Name 'Em and Shame 'Em was at the, it was at one of the hotels. It was either at the Oakland Airport Hilton in 97 or 98. It was when I was doing one event a year, which I called Compassionate Conservative Conventions. Remember when George Bush stole it to get elected? Remember that one?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I'm still a member of your,
and Jimmy, do you recall who we had pictures of when we said name him or shame him? Whose pictures were we dancing around on the stage?
Madeline Halfbright. Who else was in there? Quite a boatload of them. You kept bringing them up, and your son was there. And
right, and they're now running the country. They're now running America. You understand that as well, Jimmy?
Yes.
It could be one of them is thin-skinned and waited all these years to get even.
Yeah.
Jimmy, let me send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity for having such a good memory, and thank you very much. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Sacramento. Junior, up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Only for you, Michael, I'd have gone back to Australia long ago. I've lived in this country 60 years. Met and married a wonderful man, American husband, and I lost him 7 years ago. I have dual citizenship. I can't stand it here any longer. I'm 84 years old, handicapped senior. If they've got to carry me on a bloody stretcher, I'm going back to Australia because I know what's
why, June, happen. What is it that's bothering you today in America?
Everything. Everything you say, Michael, is what I think. And I'm too old to put it into words, and I sit here alone every afternoon waiting for you at 3 o'clock. I just want to tell you I love you, Michael. That's all.
Thanks, June. Very touching.
Savage.
The ACLU and other atheist organizations have been against any mention of the Bible in public, and if they had their way, they would probably shut all the churches down as well and turn them into houses of ill repute. They take the idea of separation of church and state to levels higher than any of our founding fathers could have dreamt about. In fact, there is no mention of a separation of church and state. Joining us today to talk about these issues is Selwyn Duke.
Hi, Michael. Great to be with you today. Well, Michael, the militant atheists are at it again, trying to do a Stalin and airbrush religion from America's history. And their latest mischief is a lawsuit to, get this, prevent In God We Trust and the Pledge of Allegiance from being engraved on the newly built Capitol Visitor Center in Washington, D.C. Now, this lawsuit was filed by ACLU clone, the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And the Freedom From Religion Foundation claims that the mere presence of such engravings is an unconstitutional endorsement of religion. Yes, In God We Trust is an endorsement of religion. And atheists say religious people are irrational? I don't get it. Anyway, we've heard this all before and it's nonsense. In fact, the whole idea of the separation of church and state is nonsense because it isn't even in the Constitution. It's another big lie, one foisted upon us by an activist Supreme Court. You see, in reality, all the First Amendment says is, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That's it. Now, What does throw some people off is that the phrase the separation of church and state had been mentioned during the Founding Fathers' time. For instance, it was in Thomas Jefferson's famous letter to the Danbury Baptist Association in 1802. But we have to remember, many things were mentioned by the founders but never enshrined in the Constitution. And like those things, the separation of church and state never, well, you could say, made the cut. And why? Well, because, as Robert Bork has said, it was a minority view when our nation was born.
I think it's the same with our lawmakers. Our legislators have many differing opinions on many different things, but most of these opinions don't become law. They only become law when there's a consensus.
Well, yeah, Michael, it's exactly the same. But, you know, on top of this, we have to understand why Jefferson used the phrase separation of church and state. He was simply trying to reassure the Danbury Baptists that, if he became president, he wouldn't use federal power to impose his very unorthodox brand of Christianity on them. So Jefferson's wall, quote-unquote, was a one-way filtration system. It kept government out of religion. It had nothing to do with keeping religion out of government. Now, the problem is here, though, no amount of historical and legal argumentation can thwart the will of people bent on revising history and creatively interpreting law. And this deception will work if citizens think that suppressing public displays of religion is a moral imperative. And many people do believe this today, and this is for a very simple reason: prejudice. And I'll illustrate my point with an analogy. Now, we all know that there are a lot of American Indian names dotting our map, right? Now, let's say I'm obsessed with eliminating them, and let's say the cultural climate is conducive to this, and I can therefore find support and a legal basis for this cultural destruction. So I scour the nation looking for offenses, and I file lawsuits against Chappaqua, New York, Alabama, Illinois, Kentucky, and other places as part of a long crusade. Okay, now, would a clear-thinking person find this normal, or would he perhaps say I had a hang-up, huh? Well, you know what? In fact, it would be right to suspect that something very ugly and maybe even something sinister drives me, wouldn't it? Now, this would strike us as the ugliest of prejudice if the target were American Indian names, symbols, or sentiments. It would strike us as prejudice if the target were Spanish or black names, symbols, or sentiments. So, why don't we register the same revulsion when religion is placed in these crosshairs? Why not? Now, I know what the critic will say. He'll say, well, wait a second. This is religion, not culture. Well, yeah, and the Indian is a red man, not a white man, so? And listen, this is exactly the prejudice I'm talking about, and I'll explain what I mean. I would ask these atheist critics a question. If religious ideas really are handed down by the creator of the universe, by the author of all, don't we have a duty to infuse our public square with them? Aren't we obligated, then, to instill children with them in school? Aren't we? Now, of course, we know what atheists will respond with here. They'll respond with eye-rolling, and they'll say, well, you may believe these ideas are divine, but we don't agree. They're just man-made. Well, you know what? From here, checkmate is easy. Here's how you win the separation of church and state debate. Simply respond, okay, but if these ideas are man-made, why do you discriminate against them? Why do you say that man-made ideas we happen to call secular may be in the public square, but man-made ideas we happen to call religious may not be? If they're all man's handiwork, my friend, what is the difference? Now, here's the point. Unthinkingly subjecting something to discrimination simply because it's labeled religious is no different than unthinkingly subjecting a group to discrimination because of its basic skin color. Now, sure, there can be legitimate discrimination. There's favoring 25-year-olds over 60-year-olds when hiring police. There's outlawing the false religious practice of human sacrifice in deference to the valid religious injunction, "Thou shalt do no murder." But this obsession with pushing religion to the back of the bus is nothing but blind prejudice. That's all it is. Look, if you want to make a logical case for this bias, go right ahead. If you want to play journalist Christopher Hitchens' tune and say, religion poisons everything, well, present your evidence, counselor. If you want to explain why man, a creature who has believed in gods for millennia, should suddenly make atheism the public default, well, marshal your arguments. Bring it on. Let's have the debate. But don't simply cite constitutional principles, whether they're legitimate or not, because you know what? Legality doesn't determine morality. And I'll tell you this. Don't expect me to accept second-class status based on being the wrong philosophical color.
Well, I think the right philosophical color in Obama's America is red diaper dopa baby red. But really, part of the problem here is that militant secularists have heard the separation of church and state mantra for so long that they've come to believe their anti-theistic prejudice is real, constitutional, and justifiable.
Well, they not only think it's justifiable, Michael, they seem to think it's a virtue. And you know what this is like? It's like a man who's raised believing that those of a given race are second class and have no right voicing their beliefs. He may feel very righteous about stilling their tongues, he might. But the fact remains that he is a hang-up. He has an obsession with no basis in reality, just like the atheists. And this prejudice of atheists is evident in the Freedom From Religion Foundation's lawsuit. What I mean is, listen to what they said. They said that putting the religious sentiments on the Capitol Visitor Center would discriminate against those who don't practice religion. They said it unfairly promotes a Judeo-Christian perspective. Well, you know what? That's nonsense. Because government institutions will always reflect certain values and ideas. It's just a question of what those values and ideas will be. And I'll give you an example. Most atheists have no problem at all indoctrinating children in school with multiculturalism, feminism, and environmentalism, and all the other isms. And all these things involve values. Hey, maybe we should have a separation of ideology and state. What do you think about that? Moreover, on what basis do secularists advocate these ideologies? Well, they obviously can't cite divine law, right? Something beyond man. That would violate their own church-state separation principle. But if these ideologies are just man-made, if they're just a reflection of what leftists like on an emotional level, well, why should we pay them any mind? You see, that's the problem with arguing for values from a secular perspective. You're saying that your values have no basis in God's law, in transcendent truth. Well, okay, but if all values are man-made, then tell me why I should prefer your man-made values to my man-made values. Tell me. But your values or my values, his or hers, the point is this. Value neutrality is a myth. Government always will be shaped by and reflect values. It's again just a matter of whether those values will hail from heaven or hell. And we won't determine what values actually are moral by denying the only one who could possibly be a credible author of morality, and that's God. And the Founding Fathers understood this, that only God can ordain with credibility.
Well, sure, that's why, for example, they emphasize that people's rights are endowed by the Creator.
Exactly, Michael. And it's also why the Founders had no problem with religious elements in government. What would have outraged them is, you know what? The very things most atheists support. And I mean today's secular isms, today's high taxation and liberty-robbing laws. And I'll leave you with this question. Given that the Founders launched a revolution over King George III's far milder trespasses, what do you think they'd tell us to do with our secular tyrants, huh? I think I know, and they'd wish us Godspeed in our efforts. Michael, thank you for having me on the show again, and I want the ACLU, Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, and the Freedom From Religion Foundation to listen closely now. God bless you and your audience.
Thanks, Selwyn. You've given us much to think about. I'll be right back.
Savage.
My deceased Russian father taught me since I've been a little boy, I'll believe it when I see it. I hated when he used to say that to me. I thought it was so cynical and so old world. He was right. You know, get it in writing. Don't believe, I mean, you know, if you're a salesman or you think you got a business deal or you're a writer and you think you got a deal or you're a guy in Hollywood who think you got a movie, yeah, when you see it in writing, you know you got the movie. You know that by now. You're not a child. You know, the deal isn't done till it's done, so nothing's happened, in other words. But I had a good time Saturday night thinking it was done. But here I am, I wake and say, so you say, well, so what? What's the big deal? What are you going on and on about? I mean, it's not the biggest deal in the world. It is a big deal. It's a very big deal to be named with murderers and terrorists when all you are is a talker in the media. Forget that my politics may not be in sync with Barack Hussein Obama or Nancy Pelosi. So what? Most of Americans don't like Barack Hussein Obama's policies. Most Americans detest Nancy Pelosi's extreme liberalism. Make no mistake about it, they're covered for by the media. The people in this country don't like them. They don't like any of their policies. This is a fluke. The election was stolen. Moreover, it was thrown. The Republicans ran an old shoe. They knew the old shoe would lose. They could have run a young, dynamic Republican who might have won. But anyway, let's not go backwards. Let's forward. Go forward. So the fact is, so what if my politics are out of sync with Obama's? You know, is that a reason to put me on a list with murderers and terrorists? There's two skinheads from Russia who killed, I think, 10 immigrants, videotaped it and posted on a website. They're in prison. Now, putting them on a list of banned from England is kind of ludicrous, isn't it? Since they're in prison for life, I believe. So why would she list them? Because the whole truth is that she wanted to list some radical imams who are preaching death to the Queen, death to England, death to the British. We're going to bring in Sharia law. And they want them out of England. Rightly so. They need to ban them to preserve their nation's sovereignty. But they're afraid of looking like they're picking on radical Muslims. So who do they put in? People in prison who can't come there anyway. And boom, out of nowhere, an American talk show host who's a conservative. Based upon what? Based upon Media Matters taking sound bites out of context and then converting those sound bites into behavior rather than to words. And so here we are. It's a giant leap for free speech in one regard for them to even say that the list is no longer going to be published. Now they got to go to the next step. You must keep up the pressure. You must continue to write to England. You must continue to say, get Michael Savage's name off the list and apologize. All right, let's move on. Big pharmaceutical companies are coming out with more and more drugs that treat symptoms and not the cures for diseases that people are looking for. Much like our government's efforts to solve our economic crisis without fixing the problems that started it. Both are similar in the ways that they try to make the general public feel dependent on both the big pharmaceutical companies as well as big government. Joining us now is Dr. Peter Breggin with a close look at this.
Last week on Savage Nation, I looked at how modern psychiatry emasculates basic American values. Now I want to focus on how modern psychiatrists and modern politicians frighten us into becoming dependent on them. Let's start with an example from modern psychiatry. You've been going through a tough time, feeling anxious or depressed. Perhaps you're having problems with your child who resists discipline or does poorly in school. So you go to a psychiatrist who tells you that you have an anxiety disorder, major depression, or bipolar disorder, and your child probably has ADHD. You're told these conditions are genetic and biological, and that you or your child must immediately start taking medications and then stay on them for the rest of your lives. But after a few months of taking drugs, it's apparent that you or your child are actually getting worse. And the side effects are dreadful, such as sluggishness and irritability and losing your mental sharpness. You explain all this to your psychiatrist, but he wants to give you more drugs. You're told that you or your child are sicker than originally thought and will be sick for a longer time than originally anticipated. You're given dire warnings about your emotional life and how it will go downhill if you reject his treatments. You are told that only the experts know how to manage the mysterious biochemical imbalances inside your brain that are about to ruin your life. You're made to feel so confused and frightened that you're willing to submit to anything for as long as it takes. Now consider the political example. The economy has been going through tough times. Your investments have tanked and you may lose your job or even your house. So you decide to vote for a new politician and for change. And instead of drugs, he prescribes stimulant packages. And like the psychiatrist, he explains that he's treating inherent defects, in this case, the basic flaws of the free market system. Like the psychiatrist, he orders you to take the stimulant package right away without a moment's hesitation. And after the crisis is over, he assures you the system will require new interventions, not just for your lifetime, but probably forever. Unfortunately, much like the psychiatric drugs, the stimulant packages do not seem to help, and the economy gets worse month after month. More bankruptcies, more unemployment. And like the drugs, the economic interventions have terrible side effects, including deficits, taxes, inflation, and the favoring of failed corporations and unions. So the politician, again like the psychiatrist, prescribes more of the same and tells you that the economy is sicker than he thought and will remain sick for a longer time than originally anticipated. You're given dire warnings about your economic life and how it will go downhill if you reject his interventions. You are told that only the experts know how to manage the mysterious financial imbalances inside our economy and that are about to ruin all of us. Once again, you're made to feel so confused and frightened that you're willing to submit to anything for as long as it takes.
How is it that patients and citizens allow this sort of thing to go on and on and on? How do they change anything?
Michael, the psychiatrists and the politicians alike make people feel so dependent on them and on their cures that they cannot imagine taking care of themselves. They cannot imagine rejecting these nostrums and returning to sound principles to guide their personal lives or their national economy. In the process, endless drugs spellbind the patients and endless government interventions cripple and befuddle the economy. Modern psychiatry and modern politics require and create dependent constituencies. They take power in times of crisis and distress and then try to make us dependent forever after. They know they will lose their grip on us if we regain our strength and autonomy.
It sounds like you're saying that they want us to feel unable to care for ourselves. I agree with you. That's why I wrote self-help books for 25 years, including Healing Children Naturally.
Right, Michael. Both of them frighten and discourage people from seeking solutions based on freedom, independence, and personal responsibility. They reject the idea that human nature strives to live by these values. Modern psychiatrists and politicians encourage us, and even at times force us, to accept less freedom, less independence, and less personal responsibility. It's time to demand something more from both psychiatry and politics in every aspect of our lives, both personal and political. It's time to restore the core values of freedom, independence, and responsibility. That brings me to my weekly reframe, the primary principles. Defend freedom, take responsibility at all times, express gratitude for your gifts and opportunities, become a source of love. This is psychiatrist Peter Bregan urging you to live like an American. You can listen to all of my Savage Nation reports and download the transcripts at www.bregan.com. That's BREGGIN.com.
Thanks, Dr. Bregan.
Savage.